Hola, my name is Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discover their origin stories, their career trajectories, and their biggest lessons learned. On this episode, I am joined by Sergio Claudio, head of school at One School, an online portfolio school for Black creatives. Sergio joined One School after a 10-year career in the digital and advertising creative industry. Sergio shares how he got into this career field to avoid being a starving artist, and we discuss the importance of lifting up the community around us. Let's get into it. Sergio, where are you from?
Well, I live in Denver, Colorado right now, but you know, as you can see this green hat here, I claim Philadelphia.
Oh, no.
Birds, you know, Eagles, Eagles crushing the Super Bowl. But yeah, I've, you know, Philadelphia's home for me. You know, I've lived all over the state of Pennsylvania. I've lived in different places of the country, but now it's currently Denver. So this is my ninth city. I live here with my wife and my family, my two kids. And, you know, we're out here living the dream.
Living the dream. Yeah. What about where you come from? Where did your family come from?
So I'm both African-American and Puerto Rican. And so my mother's side of the family comes from Western Pennsylvania. African-American, started as coal miners and steel and truck driving, and made their way through education and other types of ventures in life. And then my father and family came from Puerto Rico, you know, working in the fincas and the sugarcane fields, and came and made their way up to Erie, Pennsylvania, and up around Buffalo, New York. And so, you know, migrant workers working up there in the fields in Welch's sort of grape vineyards and a few other places. And so, yeah, those are my two foundations.
That's solid. Puerto Riqueño. That's crazy.
And Boricua.
Boricua. And, you know, Boricua is so much respect. And it's just that island packs a punch. You know what I mean? It's like I can make fun of the accent because I'm Latino and stuff like that. But... But the power and energy of the Puerto Rican people is unbelievable. The talent and art, intelligence, business savvy, fashion, everything, hard work.
Thank you for those kind words on the culture. I have always been curious why, you know, coming from the island, they always chose like lake effect snow in Erie, Pennsylvania, or Boston or New York and Rhode Island. But, you know, it was always going for the work, right? And I think you talked about the hard work. I think that's something that's been important, you know, as, you know, growing up as a Latino American is to understand, you know, those values of having hard work and going where the opportunity is, right? And having to let go of your comfort and home and things that you knew. And then also finding community, right? Like Latinos helping each other. And once you get there, you realize, oh, it's Puerto Rican and it's Nicaraguan and it's Colombian and it's Dominican. And, you know, you start to build those shared cultures and shared values in new homes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have a connection, right, in your career, right? We worked together, not like directly you and I, we hadn't met, but tell me a little bit about how your career, where was our connection? Then we worked backwards a little bit of like, how did you?
No, I've admired you and David's careers for quite some time now, back starting when you guys were at Drift. And so I was a customer at Drift. I was at Marketo. You know, the world's leading marketing automation platform back in around 2017. And, you know, Drift and AI driven chat experiences were, you know, really exciting at that time. And so, you know, as a Drift customer at both Marketo and at Adobe, you know, we got to know your business really well, got to know you guys as leaders, got to work with David, who came and spoke at Adobe Summit. And so, you know, it was great. It was great to see not only just an innovative technology like Drift was at the time, but also that the company was founded by Latinos, right? And so me being a Latino and me making my way into technology, at least coming from where I came from, there weren't a lot of other influences like that in my community. And so I remember I met David at Adobe Summit and everyone kept saying, David cancel, right? And then he walks out. You know, and I'm doing the slides and I'm doing the event, you know, setting up the stage for his keynote. And he comes out and you know, I'm just like, cancel. And so my first words out of my mouth to David were, tú eres boricua. You know, and it was just cool. It was cool to be able to do that in that context.
Yeah.
Right? I think, just that moment of all of the worlds colliding, you know, the culture, the sort of, you know, connecting with someone who's from another urban environment, but also being in technology on a global stage. You know, it was a really great moment.
No, absolutely. I felt a little similar to that. I was asked to speak. I usually don't speak at events and stuff like that. I try not to stay out of that. But I was asked by the community in Boston, which is like, you know, this is after being like 15 years or something like that here. And they're like, come and speak. And it was a Latin event. I forget what it was called. But I was in the green room. And it's everybody's Latino. And then they were all like a lot of Boricuas and Dominicans and Colombians. And they're like, ¿cuándo vas para la isla? And this and that. And I was just like, wow, I didn't realize I was not hanging with Latinos, you know, in Boston.
Yeah.
And that was actually a pivotal moment for me. You know, it made me realize, and you know, this podcast and a lot of my activity as a Latino started from there. Because before that, I was just like, writing code and like trying to build companies,
right? Well, and how did you end up in Boston? I was curious because you know, I've seen some of your story and you know your time in California, and you know, really enjoyed watching the episode that you did with your mother about some of that. So that was, you know, again, when you talk about, you know, the American dream, right, being able to buy a home for your parents and take care of the ones that take care of you, that's living the dream, man. So
yeah.
How did you end up in Boston? You know, where did that
Boston was what happened was that when I was in Tampa, I worked at IBM. It was a subsidiary. And so I kind of had I got an invitation through a job fair to interview in Northeast. Mm. And so that interview that I flew to there led to a job offer at IBM in Connecticut. And then when I was working with that team, it was a lot of young up and comers. And they did not want to live in Southbury, Connecticut. And so there was an opportunity. We started creating like an office in Cambridge, Massachusetts, at the Lotus building, the headquarter. And everybody started moving. And I was just like, can I ask for a request? No, I went one summer of 99. I drove from Connecticut to Boston. And I just remember going through the Charles River on a sunny day, sailboats on the river. And I'm like, this looks way better than like Connecticut. And like, so I want to move too. And that's how I ended up going. But it was IBM. Yeah.
And then when you were saying that, you know, you were just sort of stuck in code and maybe not in the community, that's when you had that realization. Do you think there was any particular reason why that was? Were you just so focused on the work or?
It was just focused on the work. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think, it was interesting to be naive and to not realize the discrimination or the obstacles. It just felt like another obstacle, like another obstacle of building a company, right? And so I didn't kind of want to separate them. I just, at the end of the day, the only way you can win is by producing something that customers want. And so I had enough on my plate for that to be worrying and be a victim or whatever. I was like, or this is not going well for me, or this is not. And so I was just trying to produce something of value.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I only ask because I think, you know, just, I think about sort of different chapters of life. Right. And I think, you know, especially when you're closer with family, I think a lot of Latinos might experience, you know, constant family parties and, you know, the social scene, and you've always got people around. Right. And then you move around to these different environments and, you know, maybe at certain stages, college, earlier years, you look for the community. And then to your point, you know, you get so caught up in work or in your profession that sometimes you don't see the community around you.
My case, what happened is because I moved with my wife, we were by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so, and then our main community was the church. And that church was, even though it was diverse, is predominantly white in New England. And so we kind of were isolated, supported by them. And so our activities were there, but didn't have the family pulling us or like, you know, judging us. Like, why are you not here? This party Friday at the house with the family, you know. It's like when our family, her family is the larger one of ours. My side is just my mother and my brother. And whenever we're in Florida, it's like the family is like every day gets together. Like it's like cafecito and this. And so I'm just like, this is a lot. I'm kind of on the white side there. Like, it's like, you know, like I'm super Latino, but like, I can't do that every day.
That's funny. My wife's family is all in Miami. So we go back for the family visits and the, you know, the holidays, and the volume in every house kind of hits like that red line. And yeah. So it's always great to go and take the kids and just build new memories. But, you know, whenever we come back to Colorado and it's just quiet and mountains, it's like, okay, you know. So it does change over time.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of like, yeah, same thing. So why did so you're Boricua and you're in like creative, no?
You know, I moved around to a lot of cities when I was young. Like I said, I've lived in 9 cities total. And you know, one of those things that I felt like just expression, design, art, it was something that I just immersed myself in, right? So I think, you know, I wasn't one of those, code wasn't as prevalent when I was young, but, you know, art and comics and media. And, you know, I started to find that I had an interest in just brands. And so I would spend time when I was young drawing anything I could find, superheroes, portraits of people, athletes, right? And, you know, and that became the thing that I became known for. You know, people were like, oh, you know, Sergio, he draws. You know, my father, all the way up until graduation, would tell people, oh, mira, Sergio, graduó dibujando vaca. You know, he could draw cows. Or, you know, how you say Puerto Ricans, it's like, oh, sí, es un general dibujando, right? Like drawing, he's very good at it. But, you know, as it came time to start looking for a career, you know, there was my family, especially on my mother's side, was very into education, you know, career advancement, very well established, you know, just a lot of, you know, great examples to look up to. And I always got the question, you know, so what are you going to do with the art? You know, and, you know, you got to stick to your grades, you know, because the grades are going to be what's going to help you make it into, you know, a career. And, you know, if you don't do well in school, you're going to end up becoming a starving artist, right? And so, you know, I have this whole thing that I called like the fear of the starving artist. You know, I had this sort of idea instilled in me that I needed to figure out a way to take my creativity and use it to be able to build a life and build a career. And so, you know, that's really, you know, my foundation is creative, but, you know, what that turned into was a search on, you know, well, what do creatives do with their talent? Do they go and they become fine artists? Do they go and become cartoonists? You know, like I said, I enjoyed comics at that time. And I came across this job description when looking through a phone book one day called commercial artist. And I'm like, oh, okay, is that an artist that does commercials, right? Advertising and TV. And when I started
when I started
to look more into it, it was like, no, this is an artist, a designer who designs for business, you know, for a business goal. And I'm like, that's perfect.
I won't starve.
For business, yeah, and I won't starve, right?
Can't starve. So, yeah.
You know, that became the kickoff of my journey was, you know, learning what types of roles were out there that align creativity and business. And so my first love was advertising. And that's what I ended up studying in Philadelphia when I went to Temple University.
That's crazy because it's like, that's kind of how I picked my career too. Like, I was like, in Nicaragua, I would see people doing construction in the street, and they would say ingeniero. Mm-hmm. It was like a civil engineer, right? And there, but I was like, mm-hmm. Okay. I was like, I just saw people doing construction. I was like, I guess I'm going to be an engineer. But I'm not even good with my hands at all. And I never did construction, but I was like, and then when I was in LA, then there was a computer, my dad, right? And so I was at the library. I was like in seventh, eighth grade. And now, mm-hmm. and it said some UC program, and it says computer engineering. I was like, oh, I like this computer in the garage. And I said I was going to be an engineer, so this must be it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just crazy how we make decisions like that.
I mean, it's sort of like you find the thing. Well, you know, that's interesting, right? I think from an early age, you see that everybody's doing their thing, right? They're working hard. You know, we have these conversations with our families about, you know, you've got to study, you got to do well in school, you've got to find what your thing is going to be, right? And I think, you know, we find something that we think we're going to love and choose, and then just start thinking about the future, right? How do we start to build towards that future? How do we start to build to help with the bills? How do we build to ultimately buy our parents a home one day, right?
Yeah.
It's funny though that you know, for a short time period there, civil engineering was what I thought I wanted to do as well. Because it felt like the closest thing to art. You know, I wasn't necessarily into architecture, but you know, how things work, and sort of the blend of art and science that you could find in engineering, you know, that for me was attractive. And I would say, you know, in the late 90s, design programs, I feel, weren't as prevalent across different types of schools, right? You had to go to certain schools in New York or certain, you know, certain schools like Carnegie Mellon. Lo and behold, Philadelphia Temple had the Tyler School of Art. So for me, it was like, okay, I got to go to a respected art school. But there was a surprise there too, right? Because we talked about the blend of creativity and business. And Tyler at the time taught design as a craft and expression, right? But it didn't have the business application. I had to build sort of my own curriculum when I got to school by saying,
I mean, what school teaches business?
Fox School of Business, Temple University. There's a plug there.
That's cool. And universities don't know anything about business.
Well, tell, say more about that.
They don't know anything about business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? You don't learn how to start a startup at a university. They have no clue. All they do is they study successes in hindsight. Mm. And so, like, you know, if you go to Harvard, they have a case study, they'll do a case on you, on your kind of company. But they write down some stuff, and sometimes it's not even like their actual details or like a contrived example that doesn't explain every variable, that you can't really live through it. But who teaches business? Like, what? You know what I mean? You might want to like read stories about other people, but who really teaches me to start a company?
You know, I it's a really interesting point. I love the provocation there. Here's what I would say, right? I could align with you, especially when it relates to technology, because technology is changing so fast. And when I was coming up, I mean, Flash and Macromedia and so many of the technologies out there that were being used by businesses were exceeding the curriculum being taught, right? But in the, you know, when you talk about going to university and learning business, I actually feel like depending on the school you choose and the community around you is where you get some of that learning. And you know, I'm just thinking about this as you're talking, because, you know, Temple University at the time, Tyler School of Art was out in the suburbs. Temple main campus was in the city. And I decided that I didn't want to stay in the suburbs, that I wanted to be in the city and I wanted to be around the people. And the reason being is that it's from the people that you're around with in those schools and in those communities that you can learn business.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing about it is, like, how can I say it? It's kind of, but it's like, it's like having a VC give you advice that never started a business.
Right. Right.
So if the professor hasn't built a $1 billion company, let's just be honest. Like, I'm not saying that they cannot teach us great things in from life and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't mind a good wisdom and lesson and just tell me a proverb. But if you haven't done it, how could you possibly teach someone else how to do it?
Very true.
Very true. I'm just skeptical in general, right? Like it's like people come and give me like advice and I'm like, so what did you do? You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm gonna say, people can.
Yeah. No, that's a good segue to a question, right? Which is, when people are trying to learn, maybe it's about new ventures, right? You might have career professionals who are finally saying, hey, it's time to start my own thing. And so, you know, they might be starting a startup. And so the people that they start to think about are the people that have done it before, right? You have people that might go the route of taking an exec course, and maybe that course is taught by someone who's done it and they built a $1 billion company. In other ways, people reach out to mentors. They reach out to people who might be busy, right? And so, like, yourself, right? So, you know, you're you know, a serial entrepreneur at this point. You're busy building your own things, right? But as someone who might be looking to build their own thing, you know, what's the best way to get that time or education with those folks that have built?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is that there's different types of learning, right? Mm-hmm. And so I try to learn from everybody I interact with, mm-hmm. you know, and so, but you learn different things and you have to be, your ears have to be open to learn, right? And your eyes open to see. And you get different things from different people, right? Some people will give you, sometimes you just need somebody to agree with you. And you're like, should I do this? Should I quit IBM and go start a company, right? Mm-hmm. All you need is an encouragement, right? And so anyone can give you those things, right? Especially if you admire them and respect them in your way without even, you know, don't meet your heroes, because we're all flawed human beings. And so there's some type of advice like that, right? There's some on top, you don't, and so I just meant like most of the professors in there, like it's a very outdated, and like, it depends on what you're trying to learn. Like right. Most of the curriculums at universities is completely outdated, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to business. But doesn't mean that the old books, I have a book here, it's like from 1993. And like reading that, there's like so much gold in there, but I know how to extract that, right? Given the stuff, so I don't know. I'm just saying, like, yes, you got to reach out to people. I think one of my pet peeves is that people go straight to like, I'm just gonna contact somebody and like get in touch with them and just get some time with them, shoot my shot, right? Mm-hmm. And that's great, but it's lazy too, right? Like the fact that you already listened to some of my podcasts, right, is like, okay, it's different, right? Because there's so much stuff, information out there. You always have to get the stuff that is less friction. Mm-hmm. And when you go to somebody, always offer what value you bring to that person and offer a specific question of what do you want to learn or what's your question, and show effort that you did it before, that you tried to get an answer before. Yeah. So just people are like, message me sometimes and they're like, I want to hear your story. Can I just learn more about your business? So like, you send me a message and I want to learn more about my business. It's like, well, read my LinkedIn first, right? It's like, you know, I can't. It's just we just need to be aware of like how scarce time is. And also, it's good to always. Some people, right? Do you want to reach out? If what you're trying to do is like decide, I'm going to start a startup, a company or something, I'm going to quit. Like, it's best when you're like, you can't go to the top advice or mentor to ask that question, because I don't know if you're ever going to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you say like, I jumped with 2 feet, you know, I jumped with both feet in and now I'm doing this and I tried this and that and I'm stuck, I could use some help. Then it's like, then that's better, because I know like you might need help, right? And so you're stuck versus somebody that's just like just wants to talk just to decide. I don't know. I'm just focused on my time right now of like, how do I use it to be the most valuable to me selfishly and to them? And that's why we have a podcast, right?
Yeah. Would you say that you think about at this stage your time as an investor, maybe the same way you think about investing money in terms of the things that you might look for, right?
Yeah. I mean, I read something from Mark Cuban that says, I don't go into a meeting where somebody's not writing me a check. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, it just resonated with me. I think about it every day, right? And say, mm-hmm. why am I meeting this person? Mm-hmm. Are they writing me a check? And it's not the selfishness or the transactionality, but it's more like the thinking, what's the purpose of this meeting?
Yeah.
You know? And that should apply to people that are successful or not successful. It's like, why do you want to go in a meeting with somebody that is not going to write you a check? Maybe you're going to go help that person. Okay. But if you're all your day long, you're helping people and you're not doing anything, then don't ask why you're not successful. Right. It depends. It's complicated, but I'm just being real about it. Right.
I think it's great advice. Right. I think some of the things I've had to think about recently, you know, people talk about, you know, we talked about our sort of upbringing and sort of our career orientation, right? We're always focused on the work and focused on the work. And then, you know, but to what outcome? And that outcome can often be money. That outcome can often be financial success. But then you get to a certain level where you say, but you're working towards something even higher than that, which is the freedom that comes with that money or that stability. So then your most valuable resource becomes time.
Exactly.
And so how do you use that time? How do you use that time on things that give you the most energy, give you the most value, give you the most connection? So I think it's a great perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Just time is super valuable, right? And people need to make decisions. But yeah, it's just got to seek from the people. That's why I make this podcast. I mean, this is time. I'm like, I have meetings. I'm trying to onboard customers. And then I see it. And it's like, mentors of mine have always challenged my calendar, right? I mean, you got to challenge your calendar. Like, what are you doing, right?
Yeah.
It's so like, if I show you right here, it's like, customer, 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 interview, customer, 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 right? And so it's like, and then it's like, oh, American Dream Podcast recording. And I'm just like, but then I'm like, the value is that other people will be able to hear this. We're leaving a legacy, a record of the trajectory of immigrants and Latinos across this country and the world to inspire someone to hear it without asking for any time. And saying, I grew up in Pennsylvania. I'm also Afro-Latin. I'm like, yeah, my father was a miner too. And I'm trying to decide my career. And I'm good at drawing, right? And it's like, maybe I can be like Sergio, right? Have a career, work at tech companies, have a nice house, garden, paintings, fancy chairs in Denver, Colorado.
You know, not that fancy. No.
Yeah. you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's to inspire people.
There's something there about that that I'd love to dig into and, you know, just share a little bit of thought as well. Given as busy as you are, right? You said, hey, there's something that comes up on my calendar that's about giving back to people. And so I'm going to treat it like it's a priority. I feel that that is something that comes from the cultures, right? And it's not just, you know, Latino culture. It's a lot of, you know, other type of immigrant cultures. It's in the African-American culture as well. But, you know, can you say more about that, right? Especially, you know, in this day and age where there might be some challenging narratives around programs that are designed to help underrepresented groups, right? Why, you know, why do you still make this type of work a priority? Where does that come from for you?
I mean, I think it's just role models, right? I mean, I think is foundationally is more like Christian values, I would say, like to not just be me. I mean, I'm a selfish person, right? A lot of people would be like, oh, you're selfish. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm a human being, right? But it's like, but sometimes like, it can't be about me. And the reality is that when you learn to give, it's like, it's a great feeling, right? When you just want to receive, it becomes sad and horrible, right? And it's like, I don't know. It's people need to unlock that, right? And I'm just saying, like, well, so many people helped me, you know. So many people gave me those times in those meetings and stuff like that, right? And I was like, they gave me that advice. I was naive. I didn't know. I reach out to people and some people answered and some people said things that inspire me. So I have to do it, but I have to be smart about it. And so I think that a podcast is better than having one-on-ones, but I do plenty of one-on-one all the time. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm balancing my schedule, right? Yeah. I think some people give from an ego perspective. I feel like we all have this need to be self-important, you know, and be like, I'm on a panel, I'm speaking here, I'm mentoring people. I see young people come and tell me like, someone reached out on LinkedIn and wants to grab coffee with me. And it's like, so people want to do that, right? To feel like they're giving advice. But I really like, I just want Latinos to succeed, right? It's like, I just think we're not, the talents that we have are incredible. I was in Nicaragua for the first time, right? I told you. And I was at a meeting in the backyard. And I was just giving shit to people I just never met, you know, and like, and we were joking and we were having fun. And I said this, and but everybody was catching what I was putting, you know, and I was just like, and they're like, you're a Nicaraguense for real. Like, you know, because they were seeing me as a foreigner. And I was like, these people described me and knew me without ever meeting me before. Mm. And I was like, wow. And they said, you are Nicaraguense, that you are exact. We are like you. You are like us. And they described me to the T by my nationality, not by my personality, my Myers-Briggs, nothing. They're like, they knew exactly what, how I act. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, wow. If there was more Nicaraguans in the United States, the things that made me successful is because I'm Nicaraguan. Mm. There's not many. Everybody's like, you're too passionate. You're too aggressive. You joke too much. You do this. You know. But those are the same things that made me successful. And so that moment, I was like almost literally crying, saying like, why are more non-Nicaraguans not successful if we have this great personality, attributes, and values, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what we're here.
I love to hear you say that. You know, and bringing it back to some of the comments you made about the Puerto Rican culture, right? Like, I've seen how that's shown up in work. You know, you're talking big tech meetings with, you know, 6-7-figure deals on the line, and, you know, being able to come up with sort of the energy that comes from, you know, just sort of the Latino culture, right? You bring that flavor into the room. There's a rhythm in the way that people speak, especially Puerto Ricans, right? You guys always say, you know, other cultures say that we sing when we speak Spanish sometimes, you know, but the rhythm, the salsa, the music, like there's flavor that comes through. And, you know, I think a lot of times when you're different kind of growing up in this country, you try and fit in, right? But then you come to realize that the moment that you stop trying to fit in is the moment that you really stand out, you know,
yep.
Or you use your culture, that you start to use those influences, you know, from Nicaragua, from Puerto Rico, from Detroit, Michigan, right? And you start to bring that true identity into what you do. That's where that work and your contributions really stand out.
I was just asked, what are the things that you do that other people don't believe or something? And I'm like, that you have to be direct. Mm. You know, and so it's like culturally United States struggles being direct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there might not be like, there might be other countries that might be worse. Maybe Japanese is worse or something, you know, but like, I'm always double down on direct. And whenever I try to change me not being direct, it just bites me, you know,
mm-hmm.
It backfires. And so, it's we need different ways of attacking this stuff, especially in business startups, you know. And this is my fifth company, and I'm just like, I'm going to be as Nicaraguan as it gets, you know, and sorry, whoever has to interact with me, it's like,
yeah,
this is it. No more code switch.
If I had to give my version of that, you know, I think what's speaking to me is sort of the desire to bring people along for better or worse. Right. I think when we talk about sort of the cultural backgrounds and the sense of community and how that's important, right? I think growing up on both, you know, the African American side and Puerto Rican side is just, you want everyone to win, right? And so you want to bring everyone along. And I think, you know, just back to the conversation around why, you know, work on programs to help give back to the community. It's because, you know, as you said earlier in a previous episode, which is like, none of us are self-made. There's great people who have helped open doors. We come from great communities that gave us these values, that saw the opportunity, that showed us different doors to help lift us up, right? And I think now we're those people in those levels, right? We've achieved certain levels of personal fulfillment, success, experiences that, you know, there's a sense of duty, right? You said, you know, from a Christian side, you know, to whom much is given, much is required, right?
Yeah.
You know, but then also there's just the, you know, desire to help bring people along. You bring the whole team, you know,
yeah. And
you can do so through a one-on-one conversation, you know, through the work that we do with One School, which is a school dedicated to help Black creatives make their way into the creative industry. right? I mean, that feels like fulfillment, you know, being able to take what you've been given, the gifts, the blessings, and use them to open up opportunities for other people.
No, it's I love that sense of duty thing, because I've always been a sense of duty guy. I don't know. I've always been like, I mean, like, I remember when my mother gave me the house key, you know, and I was like, wow, I have a house key. Like, it's like, I was like, you know, teen, you know, and I was like, that was like, I love when people give me responsibility, you know what I mean? And so I think that I earned it. Like, I was a Boy Scout, you know, just, and so like, you're in a community, there's roles.
Yeah.
There's deacons, there's elders, there's wise people, there is service people, there is medical people, there's loving people, there's it. And you're like, and you, when you're little, right, you're like, which one of those am I going to become, right? And so it's I don't know, it's exciting when you like realize your potential and your position in the community. Mm-hmm. We're like collaborative human beings, right?
And collaborative, you know, connection. You know, and like, you know, just the sense of duty to give, right? To give and to support, and, you know, and that's sort of, that's how you receive as well. And so I think, I completely agree. I got a question for you. Do you, you know, just at this stage in your career, are you finding connections in sort of how you show up today that have sort of always been there, right? You talked about that sense of duty when you were a kid. But maybe it's the way that you work. Maybe it's the way that you give back. You know,
where the duty just gets bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, I have to do this podcast, right? I have to, you know, people come and they tug on that. Like, you're Latino, you need to speak here. Or you need to. I did a talk at a VC firm, at General Catalyst, on like Latin, you know, Heritage Month, and they invested in me multiple times. And so it's like, okay, I'm gonna go give a talk, and then. And then I called them out for not doing anything. And I was like, why are you bringing me just one time a year, just parading a Latino to speak to the firm? And now they just messaged me. It's like, oh, we started this program that we told you. And now we have all these kids that we're trying to mentor, you know, people of color. And we're trying to mentor them to see if they can go into VC careers. Can you spend some time? I'm like, I have to say yes. You know, it's like, I'm in this mode right now where I say no to everything. People are like, go to this dinner. I could go to a dinner every day. Like, go to this event, invite you to this game. And we go to the Red Sox and we do this. And we got to come to New York, speak in this panel. I'm like, no, I'm busy. I got to work. But I said yes to that, right? Because it's a group of people that could go enter into VC. And we need more people there. And so I have to spend an hour doing a call with them, right? And giving them advice. So there's a duty that I can't say no to some of those things.
Oh, you know, and flip it around. It does sound like saying no is a superpower, right? Being able to set boundaries.
I'm, you know, so mean out there. I'm just, people are, some guy on LinkedIn right now is like, I'm with M12 Ventures. Like, can I introduce you to, and I go, do not call me if you're going to pitch me. I sound like an asshole, you know? Yeah. And the guy could have gotten but heard about it and stuff. And he's like, I get it. I didn't mean that. I really want to have companies. Okay, perfect. Send an invite. You know.
And so how do you, you know, I think there's a lot of people that might desire to say no, but maybe feel like they have to say yes, right? Or, you know, they get worried about how it's going to look if they turn down, you know, a potential door. How do you find the comfort in that? How do you find the comfort in being able to say no and let go of what might be on the other side of that in terms of consequences, potential?
I don't know. I mean, I think the success and the wealth that I've been able to accomplish helps a lot with confidence, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also just experience that, you know, you can't worry too much about what happens or what could happen, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of people just they're anxious and they're too scared. And I don't know, it's hard. Like, I think a lot of people are like, it's such a small world. So on that side, you know, things come back. But I don't know, I just can't be worried. Like, I think what to me, my comfort is, I know who I am. I know how I help. I know when I don't help. I can't be beating myself up. And if somebody gets upset at me because I did said no to them and they don't understand the circumstances or the availability, then it's okay, right? But if they want to talk about it and discuss, I can't. I care too much, right? I was just interviewed on a podcast and he goes, Elias, you say you don't care, but you care. And I'm like, yep. It's like, it's perfectly described. I don't care and I care.
And so it sounds like it does. Might that create some internal conflict, right? You care, but you've got to do this thing that might feel uncomfortable. But yeah. You're leaning into that discomfort.
And then I don't care and I just say no. So, you know what I mean? And so it's people need to balance out more. I think people, it's good to have a healthy balance of those two things.
Yeah. That it's so interesting. I think,
I like this. I'm supposed to interview you and you've been interviewing me. I hope this helps. You talked about One School. I love that. So we got to plug that in. And I love that. I think, is that your school?
So One School is a school that I've been a part of for 4 years. I'm the head of school now. I started as a sponsor while I was at Adobe. And so I helped get the school off the ground with initial funding and sponsored Creative Cloud licenses. And then I stepped in as a mentor. So I'd mentored 2 students per semester for 4 years. They asked me to come in and said, hey, you know, you're really good at mentoring students. Can you help build a program so that we can, you know, scale that? I did that for quite some time and built this community of mentors and at the same time, alumni. And so it's a completely free school that's dedicated to helping Black creatives make their way into the advertising, creative, and technology industries. For 16 weeks, they learn, you know, the ins and outs of how to answer creative briefs, how to, you know, the fundamentals of copywriting, of design, art direction, how to pitch ideas to businesses, right? New campaigns, new products. And, you know, they meet with mentors, they meet with industry professionals, they work on portfolios, and ultimately our goal is to help them get hired. And so since 2020, we've expanded the school to 5 regions. So we've got East Coast, West Coast, Chicago, Atlanta, and UK.
Wow.
And we've graduated almost 300 students. 80% of them have been hired. 65% of those students are women. And so now, you know, in year 4, or heading into year 5, we're looking at, you know, we went from not having a community to having a community of Black and brown creatives in the industry. We have plenty of Latinos who identify as Afro-Latino or Black. And, you know, now they're leaders and they're winning awards and they're driving, you know, Super Bowl campaigns and you know, working in-house at technology companies. And so now the goal is, all right, what are the tools that we need to give them to help them be successful and go from being sort of ICs to managers to, you know, potentially executives. And so, you know, just when you talk about sort of that.
Not potentially, they need to become executives.
They're going to be, right? Yeah. The next generation. It's from the next generation of Black creatives to the next generation of Black executives.
Yeah. Right? And we got to get them on the path. But once they're in the path, we got to figure out that they don't get blocked up there. But
yeah,
and everybody else starts. Eventually, everybody else becomes an executive. So why can't we?
Well, you know, there's one last thought that I had for you, question. It relates to One School, right? A lot of people take the leap to join One School. They do One School while having full-time jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Families. But they find that this is the thing that drives them. And so they commit and they change their lives, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as a startup founder, as an entrepreneur, how do you know when you have that thing that's so powerful that it makes you say no to everything else, the thing that's so powerful that it'll make you leave your job? You know, what are you looking for out of all the companies you've started where you've said, this is it. This is the thing that's going to make me zero out everything else and focus.
Well, I mean, I would say David Cancel. He just kicked my ass and he was just like, focus or if not, we're going to fail. Right. So I'm serious. That's really the, yeah, I don't know. I think I have a really good natural internal focus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very like focused. I was like, I can do many things at once, but as I break them up and I'm like, I'm going to do this, finish it. That's my superpower, is being able to finish something. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, so many people just start things and never finish. So I set a goal and I just go do it. Right. And so And then the more I've done this, the more I realize the more intense you have to be about your focus. And that's what helps me say no.
Yeah.
It's just very basic.
But for the
if you have 1 hour and you do one job, two jobs that are half hour each, can you do as much as you would if you did one job and had a whole hour? Like,
right.
It's just not possible. You can't. I don't care. Whatever anybody comes and tries to argue, I don't give a shit. It's like, do one job for 1 hour. It's going to be much better if you can give all your intensity and no context switching. We don't always have the luxury of 1 hour, but decide what else you're doing, right?
When you make that decision, though, right, you went from consulting to picking your current, you know, venture to be the thing, right? How did you know it was the thing?
That's the other thing I feel like. I mean, when Brian Halligan, founder of HubSpot, came to me and says, let's do this. Mm-hmm. I was looking for an idea and I was worried, like, how do you get an idea? It's hard. It's hard. Mm-hmm. So he said it. I did it. A lot of people just question and overthink stuff. I tell people right now, I have this product that I'm building. You should use it. And they're like, I don't know. Or like, let's do this. And so I just think that in part of it, you can't think about it too much.
Yep.
And so he said it, I did it. We could make many arguments. We can say, well, don't do what Brian said. Or might be like, what if it's too hard? What if it's too crowded? You know what I mean? We can come up with millions of things. Just because he said it doesn't mean I'm going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Or I could have been like, well, let me listen to five other billionaires to tell me what ideas they want me to do. Mm. I don't know. I don't think about it too much. I was like, he said, let's do this. I'm like, okay. And then the more I'm into it, the more I'm figuring it out, the more focused I am. Mm. But it's like the decision was made in a split second and it wasn't. And I'm just enjoying it more and more every day.
That sounds like a good segue to your call to action, right? Which is like, what do we need to say that someone should go do? You know, and I think, you know, just given our topic of conversation, you know, community and the importance of that sense of duty, right? Yeah. I think today there are people who are less established in themselves that are really afraid of their opportunities out there and being able to, you know if doors are going to be open for them and, you know, and for whatever reason. Right. And, you know, my ask is for folks to go and check out One School, right. And figure out how you can get involved. We get involved directly with companies, who help open doors for internships for our graduates, or maybe even just give them interview advice and interview guidance. We get involved with companies like Squarespace who provide technology that our students use. You know, this next generation of students, they're not only digital natives, they're AI natives, right? They're using AI, they're using chatbots, they're using different types of tools to build out ideas. You know, bring those to the table, you know, or just dedicate some time, right? You know, out of your 200 meetings that you have in a month, if you can dedicate one for 30 minutes to meet with one of our students and just share with them some insight on how to make their way into their career, you know, it could be life changing. Right. And so my call to action is check out oneschoolus.com. Come learn more about our program. You know, reach out on LinkedIn, Sergio Claudio. Ask questions. Always happy to have chats and maybe take some of the calls that Elias might not have time to do.
Oh, I'll send them to you. Nice meeting you, Sergio.
Yeah, it's great meeting you as well.
We thank you for using Drift and back in the day. And I'm sure we're going to run into each other.
Yeah, that's great. All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.